Our guest in the next few reports is John Entwistle of The Who, and we'll be hearing from him in just a moment. 10cc's reconstructed band is back on the road and has received a warm welcome from British rock critics. New Musical Express said that the band still had a few teething problems, but that when the new members had settled in, would probably be up to the standard set by the original lineup. But Melody Maker's critic considers that the new band is already better than the old, on stage at least. The reviewer said, when 10cc split last year, some cynics tried to pin the survivors with the title 5cc. But after seeing their performance the other night, I'd suggest that the same people now start calling them 15cc. This is Brian Matthew in London. People try to put us to death. Talking about my generation. The Who has been one of the world's top rock bands for well over a decade. We've been talking to the group's John Entwistle, who told us how he became interested in music.
When I was a kid, I was always interested in music. I used to sing sort of old Jolson songs to my relatives and stuff like that. And when I was about seven, I was forced to learn the piano by my mother, which I hated, you know, sort of normal sort of hunchback music teacher that rapped the knuckles and everything. And when I was about 10 or 11, I decided I wanted to learn the trumpet. So I managed to convince my mother that I could still learn how to play the trumpet and teach myself the piano from then on, yeah. And she bought it, so I started learning the trumpet. And there were too many trumpets in the school orchestra, so I ended up playing French horn. And I made my own bass guitar when I was 14, so I wanted to be louder, yeah. I wanted to play rock and roll like the rest of the kids instead of jazz, you know. I didn't particularly like jazz, and that was the only thing you could play trumpet on in those days.
We asked John to name some of the rock and rollers he listened to in his formative years.
Went to see the Bill Haley film when it came out, Rock Around the Clock. Yeah. And I was listening to people like The Shadows, Eddie Cochran, Gene Vincent, Johnny Kidd, or something.
And Lonnie Donegan?
Lonnie Donegan, yeah, it was. I don't know, it seemed to be a different era. I was playing the trumpet when other kids were playing skiffle. You know, I was playing sort of, I was playing mainstream jazz, I suppose. You know, like I was into Kenny Ball and Acca Bilk, and the rest of the kids at school were into sort of Lonnie Donegan and playing guitar. And I caught on to the guitar only when it really sort of turned electric, I suppose.
John Entwistle of The Who will continue his story in our next report. Until then, goodbye. John Entwistle will join us again in this report, but first, the latest rock news. Despite problems not normally encountered by rock groups, the Sex Pistols have stormed into the British charts with their new single, God Save the Queen. Commercial television wouldn't accept advertisements for the single, many radio stations won't play it, and a couple of chains of record stores won't stock it. But initial pressings sold out so quickly that Virgin Records were daring to hope that they might have a number one on their hands. Johnny Rotten, the Pistols' lead singer, has been unmoved by the success and remains the shy, self-effacing lad parents everywhere have grown to love. I'm joking, of course. In an interview this week, Rotten said, "The Pistols are the best. They're the only honest band that's hit this planet in 2,000 million years." Ray Davies of the Kinks is to stage his rock musical Preservation in a London theatre later this year, but the Kinks will not be appearing in it. The band toured America with the show and also performed it in London, but now Davies envisages a long run at a leading theatre and the Kinks don't wish to commit themselves to an extended season. Instead, Davies will be closely involved in the casting and production and will rework the score. He plans to make an album with the theatre cast and eventually to present a film version. This is Brian Matthew in London. The music of The Who. Their bass player, John Entwistle, tells us the famous group was formed as a school band.
It consisted of a sort of Shadows type lineup, guitar, rhythm guitar, bass and drums. And Pete Townsend was the rhythm guitarist. And Roger also had his own group. He was a lead guitarist. And he one day invited me to sit in with his band because they needed a bass player. And as his band was working on sort of firm outings and stuff like that, you know, going down to Bognor or Brighton in the coach with the equipment in the back, getting off halfway back at a pub and playing, you know, that sort of gig. I left the group I had at school when I was about 15 and joined his. And then we brought in Pete on rhythm guitar later. And later on we got rid of the rhythm guitarist. And then there came, I suppose, a change in our lineup when we started realising that the Beatles were the new thing, and like sort of vocal harmony and all this sort of business. We got rid of our lead singer, and Roger changed to singing, Pete changed to lead guitar, and gradually Roger dropped the guitar and just turned into a singer. We were influenced a lot by Johnny Kidd and the Pirates as well.
And we'll be hearing more from John Entwistle in our next report. Until then, goodbye.
And they couldn't prevent Jack from being happy.
In a few moments, John Entwistle tells us more about his band, The Who. Queen are on the road in Britain. Most critics here have always found this band a little hard to take and have accused them of overproduction and superficiality. But now there are signs that at least some rock writers are being won over. Record Mirror says that Brian May, the lead guitarist, gave a stunning display at the band's opening concert. The magazine said that Freddie Mercury was also brilliant at times, but that occasionally there seemed to be a barrier between this impressive frontman and his audience, a barrier one couldn't help suspecting was created by the singer's vanity. Sounds magazine said that Queen are not profound or essential, but that they deserve every last unit of their popularity. The writer said they're a good joke and fine entertainers. Meanwhile, Freddie Mercury has told the press that the days of the big production jobs involving months in the studio are over. "We're fed up to the teeth with that production thing," said Freddie. "In future, we're going to write songs that don't require that sort of attention." This is Brian Matthew in London. Back now to John Entwistle as he calculates how long the present four members of The Who have been together.
I've been playing with Pete Townsend. I mean, he played a banjo for a while in the jazz band I was in, and I must have been about 13 or 14 then, so that's near enough, I suppose, nearly 20 years. With Roger it's been 18 years, and with Keith 14, 15 years, something like that.
Few top bands have managed to stay together that long. We asked John for the secret of this longevity, pointing out that the members of The Who appear to have little in common.
Yeah, we're four completely different people with sort of opposite star signs. We're earth, air, fire and water, you know. And people have tried to do sort of astrological charts to try and find out what makes us tick, and all they come across is that we were suited to each other. You know, it's sort of a perfect combination of people to form a group for some reason. I don't know, maybe it was the determination through all the fights to stick together. We weren't going to let disagreements amongst ourselves stop the group, because we all believed in the group and that there was something magic that we had to hold on to, and the group was very important to us. We always enjoyed playing together. We enjoyed each other's company to a certain extent, not too much of it, you know. But we still enjoyed playing together, and we still enjoy each other's company. And we've learned, I suppose it's like a marriage, you learn to live with each other, you know, you learn the other people's faults and to accept them.
John Entwistle of The Who, and he'll be with us again in the next report. Until then, goodbye. Our guest in this report is John Entwistle of The Who, but first, the rock news. George Benson has played his first British concerts and received a tumultuous reception. He deserved it, according to the reviews. Sounds magazine uses words like stunning, sensitive and superb. In Melody Maker, veteran music journalist Ray Coleman writes, "While Benson's not playing jazz anymore, it's a pleasant, clever blend of disco funk and creative middle-of-the-road music, which comes across as a sound palliative to battered ears." Coleman adds, "It's said that when social problems abound, public taste turns to slop which can be easily absorbed. If that's true, we should be glad for the success of George Benson, whose music is at least fresh, honest, invigorating, and played by a craftsman." This is Brian Matthew in London.
I can go anyway without you.
The Who will soon be in the studio to record a new album. John Entwistle says that this will be one of the rare occasions when group members get together at the outset to exchange ideas for songs.
Usually, when we're writing songs, you know, people do finished demos of the song and play them to us, and then we change them around to whatever we want them to be. You know, we change the bass part, the drum part, the arrangement, some of the words. Likewise, if I write any songs, I do a finished demo and present it to the group and just play it to them. Yeah. And really, it's at the demo stage that the composer's done himself that we decide whether or not to do the number or to attempt the number. Yeah. Sometimes we will play the number through in the studio, you know, sort of rehearsing the actual backing track stage of it, and decide that we're going to scrap the number at the backing track stage. You know, other times we'll do a few overdubs and then decide to scrap it. You know, there's a lot of stuff has been stopped at those stages. But we don't really get together and talk about the songs themselves. We wait until we get in the studio. In fact, we usually wait until we get in the studio to learn the songs. But we're trying it a different way for this album. We're having about a 2-week rehearsal at Shepperton, and then we're taking a month afterwards to rewrite the stuff or write new songs, you know, out of riffs that we've got from jamming.
At this stage, John can't tell us much about what to expect on the new album.
I don't really know. I haven't actually heard Pete's demos yet. It won't be anything. I don't think it'll be anything magnificently orchestral like Quadrophenia or Tommy. You know, I think it'll be similar to the other album, but the words will have less sort of deep meaning, I should think.
John Entwistle of The Who, and next time he'll be talking about his solo work. For the present, goodbye. Is your counter's ball that deaf thumb back is? Sure plays a mean pinball. John Entwistle of The Who joins us again in a few moments. Before that, news of a rave review for the new Ted Nugent album. The Motor City Madman's LP, Cat Scratch Fever, has been selected by Sounds Magazine as Album of the Week, and the reviewer says, not only does it leap out of the speakers and go for you like a rabid dog, it's got some positively terrific songs. The writer says that Nugent's band is so good that even without their wild frontman, they'd still be world beaters. The Chieftains have started a world tour. They're now in Australia, we'll go to New Zealand, then to Denmark for a festival, we'll do some filming in Ireland, follow that with a series of open-air dates in America, and we'll then tour Canada and Europe. This is Brian Matthew in London. And now more from John Entwistle of The Who. He's engaged in several projects that don't involve the group as a whole.
Well, the one thing that I've just finished was playing on Roger's solo album. I played on about 4 tracks on the English version and about 5 tracks for the American version. The American version is slightly different. The single's been taken off. I did a little bit of backing vocals on Pete's album. I was actually doing a cartoon history of The Who, but I've stopped that halfway through because I want to write some songs for the next album, so I've been writing songs. Next week I go into the studio to produce a group called The Fabulous Poodles. And the next project after that really is The Who rehearsals, you know, and then The Who album.
John Entwistle's last solo album was released about 2 years ago. He says that at the moment he doesn't have enough material together for another LP.
I really wanted to think out my writing before I actually, you know, I could have sat down and written a load of stuff for an album and released it and nothing would have happened to it. But I really had to sit down and think out how I was going to do the album and who I was going to use on it. It's very difficult, you know, releasing a solo album when you're still in The Who is really a difficult way of doing it. Because if anybody wants to hear you play, they can still go out and buy a Who album, and they get Townsend, Daughtry, Entwistle and Moon all on the same album. So it's very difficult. We've got a limited market, unless you really sort of sit down and think, now, if I play with such and such a person and such another person and use them throughout the album, then there's going to be new interest. You know, you're going to get people from their side, people from your side buying the album.
John Entwistle, and we'll hear more from him in our next report. Until then, goodbye. In this report, we'll be hearing more from John Entwistle. Before that, news of the new Yes album. It'll be released in the third week of June after delays caused by differences over artwork and the title. The album features Rick Wakeman, who replaced Patrick Mraz at the end of last year. It was recorded in Montreux, Switzerland, over a period of 7 months. Montreux will be the site of an international music festival in July. Among the acts appearing will be Donovan, Rory Gallagher, Muddy Waters, Bonnie Raitt, Shakti, Stummel Your Master, The Average White Band, and Big Joe Turner. This is Brian Matthew in London.
I know you deceived me, now here's a surprise.
John Entwistle says that after all these years as performers, members of The Who don't normally get very keyed up before concerts, but there are exceptions.
We only usually get keyed up now before the first gig of a tour, you know, or if we haven't been playing for a long time and we get... I usually get keyed up before a London gig, because you can always guarantee that there's at least 30 people that you know personally in the audience somewhere, you know. And I find it very hard to behave like a pop star on stage when my sort of relations are watching me, you know. I think, well, they really know me, you know, they've sort of known me all my life. How can I sort of get up there and do the whole sort of ego thing?
Other members of The Who are often in the news for non-musical activities. Pete promotes the cause of Mayor Barber, Roger is a film star, and Keith Moon is a Hellraiser. John keeps a lower profile.
I've got hobbies, but they're not really sort of publicity sort of stuff, you know. I go fishing, I skeet shoot, I draw. You know, I suppose the art side of things is starting to come out now. You know, I'm about halfway through the cartoon history, and it seems to be working out very well. And I'm hoping to publish that sometime next year. I've got my own publishing company ready for it, called Oxtails Limited.
John Entwistle, who went on to talk about some of the music he's been listening to lately.
I listen to a lot of Eagles, Joe Walsh, Doobie Brothers, occasionally to stuff like Graham Central Station, things like that. I usually like music as a background, you know. Most of the time if I'm having a party, it'll be some really sort of old rock and roll stuff, you know. I've got a jukebox full of it and I just let people stick the stuff on.
John Entwistle will be back in our next report. Until then, goodbye. In this report, John Entwistle talks about a highlight in the history of The Who. But first, some rock news. Emerson, Lake and Palmer continue to amaze with their appetite for the big and the spectacular. At present, they're toting their large orchestra and choir around North America. When they return to England, they'll start rehearsing for big shows in Edinburgh and London, where they'll be joined by the famous Royal Philharmonic Orchestra and a ballet company. It's believed that ELP will also headline at one of this year's British festivals. Appropriately, this festival will be staged in the grounds of a stately home owned by one of Britain's richest noblemen, the Marquis of Bath. This is Brian Matthew in London. Our current guest is John Entwistle of The Who, who recalls a memorable event.
Looking back on it now it's all over. I think Woodstock was pretty exciting, but it wasn't particularly exciting for us at the time, because we were due to go on stage at 6 PM, and we found out that no one was getting paid. So we said, all right, we're not going to leave the hotel until the money arrives. You know? So the money arrived and we finally left the hotel at 4. But by then the helicopters that were transferring the people to backstage were being used to fly in medical supplies for the ODs that were going on, you know. And we had to drive in. And when we finally got there, and we got changed to go on stage, and it was mud all over the place. There was acid in the fruit juice and STP in the coffee, and the toilets were piled about 10 feet high in toilet paper and other refuse. And I had a bottle of bourbon with me, which I was drinking to quench my thirst, because I trusted that, because I brought it from the hotel. And I got pretty sloshed, and then I really got thirsty, so I had some fruit juice. So then we all ended up out of our brains completely, because, you know, the band sort of, every band went on and overran, you know, they sort of didn't want to get off stage because they were getting turned on by sort of 600,000 people, you know. And we finally went on at 6 o'clock the next morning. But the main thing was that we got on stage, it was still dark, and we played Tommy more or less in its entirety. And when we got to the song I'm Free, where he gets back his sight and everything, suddenly the dawn came up and it was daylight, and it really freaked the whole audience out.
John Entwistle of The Who, and next time he talks about Britain's new wave rock. Until then, goodbye. Our guest is John Entwistle of The Who, and he'll join us in a few moments. Britain's new wave bands are finding it hard to get dates in the wake of a controversy about a London concert by a band called The Clash a few weeks ago. Several rows of seating were wrecked at this show, and now local councils are refusing to allow halls under their control to be used by bands classified as new wave. The bands themselves are claiming that their revolutionary stance is responsible for the censorship. They seem to overlook the fact that local authorities might be concerned at the prospect of damage to public property. Nevertheless, there is an element of Big Brother guardianship of public morality involved. One council spokesman made the pompous statement, "The type of entertainment which is associated with this type of group is not in keeping with this council's policy of entertainment." And meanwhile, the groups, their fans, the record companies, or some of them, and the rock press are growing angry. And once again, the censors appear to be creating precisely the sort of situation they were trying to prevent. This is Brian Matthew in London. Why don't you off? When The Who started out, they were regarded as symbols of youthful rebellion. We asked John Entwistle if they were angry and out to change society.
No, not really. I don't know whether Pete felt that way, but I never did. I mean, I was an old rocker that had been converted into a mod. You know, I always thought we were too old to be mods, but the mod kids seemed to identify with us. And we had some sort of, our first few songs were very angry songs. We were very violent on stage, and off stage we ended up just as violent, I suppose. You know, we had a lot of fights between ourselves, and we always seemed to be getting into trouble and thrown out of hotels. I think that about the strongest feeling I ever had was when we first went over to the States, and we used to get the Mickey taken out of us for wearing such strange clothes and having long hair. You know, in those days, You're supposed to see everybody's ears, you know, and sideboards were not supposed to be over a half inch long. Now it's completely changed over there. But in the early days when we were over there, we were looked on as freaks, and that made me very angry. Yeah.
So it appears that The Who weren't angry in quite the same way as some of today's punk rockers are, or claim to be.
I suppose after the war, we were used to sort of hardships and, you know, the good old Blitz and England will come through and all that sort of business. And, I mean, there was a different kind of violence in those days. We weren't angry at anything in particular, we were just angry at boredom, really. You know, maybe it's different nowadays. I don't really know what they're angry about, but I'm still angry about income tax and government and stuff like that.
John Entwistle of The Who. Until our next report, goodbye. The kids are all right. Kids are all right. More about new wave rock and other matters coming up from John Entwistle in a few moments. Recently, I mentioned a claim by Johnny Rotten of the Sex Pistols that his band was the best in the world. In that same interview, Johnny also said some very disparaging things about some of rock and roll's sacred cows. Poor Pete Townsend, who's been talking and writing in support of punk rock, wasn't given the rotten seal of approval. How dare he try to tell us what it's about, said Johnny. He half admits he doesn't understand what's happening. I don't think he ever knew. Members of the Pistols said that another of their champions, Roger Daltrey, was even worse than Townsend. They also attacked Robert Plant, Mick Jagger and Ian Anderson. And then they accused their new wave contemporaries of selling out to the major record companies. This is Brian Matthew in London.
I don't mind the guys dancing with my girl.
Recently, both Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey of The Who have spoken in support of Britain's new wave rock movement. John Entwistle says that he hasn't heard much of this sort of music.
I don't go out of my way to sort of listen to new stuff at all. You know. I find it tends to sort of interfere with my writing if I listen to a lot of new stuff. I just about got out of it, but I started getting influenced by the Eagles stuff because I was playing it so much, and all my stuff ended up sort of really strummy acoustic stuff, and I really had to snap out of that. So I started writing on piano again, which changes my style completely. The radio's on all day in the kitchen, but whenever I'm in the kitchen, I listen to the radio. But they don't seem to be playing much of the new wave stuff at all. Someone should be playing it, radio-wise, but no one seems to be yet.
We asked John if he still expected to be involved in rock and roll when he was 60.
I don't really think I'm going to reach 60 anyway. No, I mean the way I live my life, sort of drinking and smoking and having a good time, I don't really think I'm going to live that long. Unless by some chance the sort of brandy is pickling my body and sort of preserving it. Yeah. I can see The Who carrying on for as long as we're doing stuff that we like and that we believe in. You know, if recording new albums, if we like the stuff we're writing and we really believe that it's good compared to the rest of the stuff about, then we'll carry on. You know. But as soon as something starts to drop, I think we'll probably decide that, okay, we do a farewell tour, which will probably, if we play to everybody who wanted to see us, it'd probably take us 2 years to do the farewell tour, but then we'd stop after that.
We'll hear some final comments from John Entwistle in our next report. Until then, goodbye. Our guest in this report is John Entwistle of The Who, and we'll be hearing from him in just a moment. With several big open-air festivals coming up in Britain, promoters are working feverishly at trying to attract major international stars. Aerosmith have been confirmed as headliners at the three-day Reading Festival, and among other big names being sought for outdoor events are Led Zeppelin, Wings, Santana, Chicago, The Beach Boys, The Who, Hall & Oates and Bob Dylan. And here in London, a series of 50 concerts is being planned at a venue which, it's claimed, will be the biggest tent auditorium ever erected in Britain. The marquee will be near the famous Tower Bridge and will seat more than 6,000 people. This is Brian Matthew in London.
Pictures of it made my life so wonderful.
John Entwistle now, who tells us about an important factor governing the amount of touring done by The Who.
It's very difficult for The Who to go on stage and play the same old stage act over and over again. You know, we get disinterested in it. We usually try and drop a stage out before we get disinterested in it. Tommy just went way over the top. You know, we had to play it continually for 3 years. And we don't particularly want that to happen again, because that took us off the road for a couple of years when we stopped doing Tommy.
Well, you'll soon have the material from the new album to draw on. Will you be touring probably pretty soon after the release of that?
Yeah, we're... When we came off our last American tour last November, it was a really good tour, and we were sort of really up, and I think we all could have carried on playing and touring for the next 6 months, you know, just on the strength of that one tour and how we enjoyed ourselves. But the fact still remained that we needed some new stuff to inject into the stage act. We're still hoping this album will supply it. This is why we're actually rehearsing before we go in to do the album, so that we can make sure that there are some songs suitable for stage on the next album. Because as far as the last album was concerned, there was only two that were really suitable. And two tracks don't sort of change your stage out particularly that much.
Finally, we asked John when we could expect release of The Who's next album.
Well, it'd be really nice if we had it out by Christmas, but that would be the earliest as far as I know. We've got August off. Well, I think we're going into the studio in September, so it just leaves sort of October, November, December, so we might just about get it out for Christmas.
Our guest was John Entwistle of The Who. Until our next report, goodbye.